All right. Welcome, everybody, to another Tuesday Team REI Vault Huddle Call. Today is Tuesday, November 11th, 2014. I'm glad to have all of you on with us. We mentioned a couple weeks ago that we changed the format a little bit where we're going to open up and unmute the lines here once Chris and I walk through some of the updates for everybody. We'll unmute. What I would like to ask is it can get kind of crazy if you got a lot of background noise, so we just ask that if you've got any background noise, please mute yourself. And the format of this call is really whatever you're struggling on the real estate side. We wanted to have a little less structure and see how it goes where, you know, if you have questions around marketing, you know, sales, talking to sellers, whatever it is that's pressing, use this format and forum as a way to get some of that stuff addressed, because if you're having issues, other people are probably having issues. And as normal, you can always email anything technical in nature to support@salesteamlive.com, and anything deal-related, always email dealhelp@reivault.com, dealhelp@reivault.com. And you've heard this before, I'm sure, but be as specific as possible in your request. And if it's related to a Podio lead, just make sure that you copy the URL, the website link, in your email. So you just copy the website URL, which would be like a podio.com/ whatever the seller lead is, and put it in there so we can look directly at the lead and answer your question as fast as we can. A couple updates just from me. There is a new video that's being loaded. It should be out there right now. It's on how to process hangups. There's a little tip that you can use for calling hangups. Remember, calling hangups, about 50% of the inbound leads coming into Podio are typically hangups. It's a seller didn't leave a message. They just called and they hung up for a variety of reasons. And it's really best. We're seeing a good conversion if you can get on these hangups quickly. And there's a little simple way in about 10 or 15 seconds where you might be able to find not only the seller name, but the property address. And you might even be able to look that property up on Google Street View. So when you call the seller, you'll have a little bit more rapport and a little bit more credibility calling them. So I built a quick little presentation, about 5 to 7 minute video on how to do that. That's loaded at reivault.com under Podio in the seller area. Let's see, what else do I have on my end? I think that's it. Chris, any updates that you have for the group? Elijah, Chris?
No, I'm sorry, I was just muted. So,
okay.
I don't have any specific updates right now. Okay. I'm sure I will think of something as we go on, maybe.
Okay, cool. Why don't we go ahead and open up the line? And you can always press *5 as well if you have a question and you want us to call on you directly. I'm going to go ahead and unmute the line and open it up. And if you have questions, this would be a good format forum to. All right, you guys are all unmuted. Marty, are you on? Marty. All right, well, we'll see if Marty comes in. Marty had some questions on comps. He's actually struggling a little bit on what offer. He said that he's had some issues on just what offer to make with the seller. And I spoke with him for probably 20 minutes, 30 minutes a couple of days ago, and had a number of recommendations. I just thought it would be a good opportunity to discuss it as a group. Anybody have a pressing question that you want to ask Chris or myself?
The one comment I was going to make about Marty's, because I did look at his information.
Mm-hmm.
And when in doubt, you know, sellers will tell you that they have no idea what they want. But obviously, their amnesia goes away the minute you make them a lowball offer, miraculously. And so one of the things that I think about is, a couple things, is that I always default, whenever somebody has tenants at the property, I always default to making an ROI-based offer. Now, not every market you know, every market is different, you know. So in Florida, we try to get properties that are 20% ROI versus a 25% ROI. And in your market, especially in a very, you know, top market, that might not be the case. You may not be able to do that. So you have to kind of figure out what the ROI number is in your market that enables you to move properties. But by default, whenever somebody has a renter or a rental situation, I always default to ROI as an initial offer. And the other thing is, and this is something that I made a comment about in an internal team today, was that the objective is trying to figure out what's the lowest that seller that you have on the phone, what's their bottom line number going to be? And when you get to that bottom line number, is then figuring out if you're going to take a chance on it, which is a little bit different than saying, is it a deal or not a deal, right? So I don't know if something's a deal or not, because I don't know until I put it out there and I try to sell it and then see if it comes back like it's a deal or not. Because many times we'll type a property that we think it's a sure deal and it won't sell, and then we type another one that we think is kind of skinny and that would sell. So you never really know. So my assumption, my strategy is, how can I go in, or, you know, what's the price point that I'm going to go in at to try to figure out what their bottom line number is. And then once I figure out the bottom line number, then I'll make a decision if I want to take a chance on a deal. And taking a chance on a deal, you know, different factors. The one is price, right? Whether or not, if it's horribly overpriced, then you may not take a chance on it. If it's reasonably priced, you may. Another factor in whether or not you're going to take a chance on the property could be, how difficult is it going to be for you to put that property in the contract? So, you know, you may have a mediocre deal, but the seller is willing to sign a contract. He has no issues with your agreement. He's not going to ask for a deposit. And you know what? It's very easy for you to put it on the contract, give yourself a 10-day inspection period, and try to see if you can move it. You may have, on the flip side of that, you may have an amazing deal. You may have a deal that you think you're going to go out and retire for the summer on this deal. But maybe the seller has an attorney, and the attorney wants $30,000 in cash delivered to his office, and he wants you to jump through a million hoops, and he wants to give you a 7-day closing date, and all these other obstacles in the way that then all of a sudden make that, what, you know, perceived to be an amazing deal, challenging, because to put it on the contract, it's going to be kind of an obstacle course. And not saying that you can't overcome those things, but everything is relative, you know, so it's never really a cut and dry. And I think that one of the things that I see as a mistake people make is that looking for something that's cut and dry. Because when you're looking for something that's cut and dry, all of a sudden, all the ambiguity that you encounter is going to make it difficult for you to make a decision. Because again, when all is said and done, this is a game of chances. This is a game of probability. And, you know, we're trying to make the best judgment we can on whether or not we're going to take a chance on something. But, you know, there's ambiguity there. And a mentor of mine always said that a successful, an entrepreneur's ability to succeed is in direct proportion to the amount of ambiguity that they can deal with when they're working inside of their business. And so that was the I'm trying to give a big picture of, as I went through Marty's comps and some of the challenges that I perceived he was having, you know, it wasn't really a cut and dry answer that I could give him. It was just more of, you know, hey, look at this, think about that, think about this, and then you're going to have to make a decision, and don't be afraid for that decision to be the wrong decision, because that becomes a paralysis of analysis, because then you'll analyze the deal to death and never make a decision about it. You know, you just got to figure out, you know, hedge your bets and figure out where you can take your chances on. So anyway, that was my short, long-winded comment.
That's pretty much what I said to Marty. I said, first off, Marty, you're spending way too much time stuck in analysis paralysis. You know, analyzing a deal if you're wholesaling probably shouldn't take more than 3 to 5 minutes. Would you agree with that, Chris?
That's long. Less than that.
Agreed. That's what I told him. I said, when you're not going to know. It's, So Marty's done deals where he's basically bought with owner financing, where he's mm-hmm. he's done deals where he's rehabbed. He's really switched into wholesaling to take advantage of the market, but he's kind of stuck in the old mindset of, you know, getting your numbers right and, you know, maximum allowable offer and after repaired value and figuring out all of your repair value. And I'm like, stop all that, Marty. You're not going to really know until you actually have a couple of buyers going out to the property. So give it your best shot. You know, I think we're more aggressive, and tell me if you agree with this, Chris, we're more aggressive on price when we have more deals under contract. I call it Cool Man Luke. Remember, it was at years ago, the movie Cool Hand Luke with Paul Newman. And he said, when you don't have anything in your hand, a whole lot of nothing is a good hand, right? So, you know, we're more aggressive when we got a lot of deals under contract, which means, you know, work the price a lot better. And if you don't, get, you know, have under contract, worst case scenario, you got to go back and renegotiate with the seller. And, you know, and that's fine. Actually, there is Marty. I'm going to bring him onto the call. Hey, Marty, I'm going to put you on the spot. You there?
Yes, hi. Hi, I'm sorry.
How are you?
Tied up.
No, that's good. I'm actually, we're talking about your questions around some of your deals. So you might want to go back and listen to a little bit. You and I chatted a couple of days ago.
Yes.
You know, your background is more on buying properties with owner financing and possibly doing rehab. And so you've gotten stuck on how do you quickly come up with the price and not get stuck in analysis paralysis, you know, type of stuff. Is that some of that?
Exactly. Yes. I mean, it seems to me more of an art than a formula. You know, multifamily is a formula. Single family home is more of an art.
Yeah. Now, if you're like Zeke, and I don't know, Zeke, if I'm going to put you on the spot if you're there. But, you know, Zeke in Texas, they're selling more of a turnkey product. So getting the price, you know, they're looking at a particular margin, and they got to get their, you know, the numbers, you know, accurate on the front end. So they're going out to the property, and they're looking at the rehab and what they're going to sell that property and looking at the return on investment, et cetera, a lot closer. But if you're purely wholesaling, you know, it is going to come down to giving your best guesstimate and then sending some buyers out. And after you've got a couple of good buyers going out there, then you'll start, you know, recognizing, okay, did I overpay? Did I underpay? You know what I mean?
Right.
One other thing, Marty, I asked Chris, I told Marty when I spoke with him, I said that we don't spend more than 3 to 5 minutes really analyzing our offer. And Chris said that's on the long side. You want to explain
really?
That, Chris?
It takes me 5 minutes just to download the information, but that's not a story.
Well, I mean, that I think once you have the info, I also would try to not, you know, there's so many, you could go into Zillow, you can go into a variety of, you know, pull a lot more data. And in the end, I would find that in the end, it doesn't really, really affect my outcome. And the things I said, and I replied to the various properties, and I don't want to, the gist of what I said is that it's really a game of, it's a game of what's the lowest price we can get the seller. Sometimes they tell us an offer, and so then we gauge how much we're going to offer below that to try to see what really their bottom line number is. Sometimes they don't give us a number, so we have to go, you know, we have to make a judgment call if it's a rental property, then we do, you know, an ROI calculation as an initial offer. But if not, you know, we tend to go lower to try to get a number from them. And in the end, it's not, the biggest advice I can give you is not, don't try to figure out what the property is. Don't try to figure out if the property is a deal or not. It's really a question is the property a property that I'm going to take a chance on? Which is a slightly different perspective, but it's really, it's a game of, you know, if you have, it's a relative game. If you have 20 deals, 20 leads that have come across your desk, then it's figuring out of those 20, which of those 20 do I stand a chance of perhaps doing something with? Which are the best pricing on those 20? Which are the ones that I could put on the contract without too much work. You know, i.e., if the seller has an attorney and they want a lot of the, you know, they want a large deposit in a short closing date. So it's really a game of figuring out where you're going to take your chances, because in the end, you know, unlike a regular deal where you close and you take a property subject to, you know, our risk is very minimal. You know, we're just looking to put the property in the contract, try to wholesale it, and if it doesn't work out, we back out of the deal. So it's really more of a game of where are we going to, you know, put our chips on the table, knowing that in the end, you know, unlike a casino, we get to take our chips back if we lose, so we don't lose our chips. And I put some deep, I don't know if you got a chance to look at my responses, but I wrote up some specific responses to each of the comps that you had sent in. And if you didn't, that's fine. And then if you needed more information or more help on those, I'd be more than happy to give them to you if you reply back or, you know, anything you need help with. I don't know, did you get a chance to look at my replies at all or no?
Yes, actually, that's, that's why I got to the phone a little bit late. I didn't realize that you responded, and I gave it a quick glance, and everything you did respond to, and I mean, that's, I couldn't ask for anything more than that, and I'm going to work on that and see where it brings me. You know, it makes you know, I come from a scientific background, so everything for me is analytical. You know, multifamily was very easy because it was all analytical. So, you know, if I could, you know, if I can convert your discussion on those comparables to a formula that I don't have to hold to. What I'm saying is I'm going to give it a shot and see where it takes me, really.
Well, you know, I mean, what I would say is on that, on whatever I commented on, if you have any additional questions or any clarification,
yeah,
let me know.
Yeah.
As you interact with the sellers and you get some input, obviously don't hesitate to come back to me, and I'd be more than happy to give you another input. And keep in mind is that my old trade, I used to be an accountant, right? So, and Gary will tell you that I am extremely analytical to a fault. So you and I operate in the same way. So I understand where you're coming from. And it's just a little bit of an adjustment. You know, a little bit of an adjustment. But I think we can get you there. And it's just a matter of going back and forth and troubleshooting. What helps me the most is whenever you send me anything to look at, is just if you send me something and you say, not that you would do this, but if you send me a link and you say, hey, because I don't know what to do here. It's tough for me to help as much as perhaps if you were to send me a link and say, hey, I'm a little bit confused about this. Here's what I'm thinking. Here's the reason why I'm thinking this. And that way, when I do respond to you, then I understand where you're coming from, and I can kind of troubleshoot and try to pinpoint maybe the areas of how you're analyzing these things that we could change. Right? Does that make sense?
Yes, 100%.
Yeah.
100%.
So, you know, the best help you can give me to help you is just if you can let me know what's going on inside your head and what you're thinking in your analysis, then I could help in helping you make those adjustments.
Right. Yeah. I made a few notes on that. I don't know if that's what you're referring to, but I thought if a few notes that I put on those comparables, if that gave you a little
bit of that. Yeah, that helped. Yeah, it helped.
So
yeah.
I understand what you're saying. Yes.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, and this is for the entire group. If there are some recommendations that any of you need, let me give you an example. In Florida, we actually have RVAs pulling Zillow values. So they're actually going out as an additional step and pulling Zillow values for the property for any of these viable leads and adding that. And we haven't done that for the rest of the group because we haven't seen any requests as a trend. But if you think that would be valuable, send an email to suggestionbox@reivault.com or anything else that would be helpful to gather that would make it easier for you to make offers and get these deals pulled together. We like Zillow. Our sales team in Florida likes Zillow because sometimes when the seller comes in And they ask for, you know, $120,000 for the house, and Zillow shows $120,000. We kind of have an idea of where they came up with that number, and it allows us to address it and negotiate with them a little faster. And so if you need it, we don't want to have the VAs do additional work if not needed. But if there's stuff that would be really, really helpful for you in making money and getting this thing, you know, getting some of the grunt work done, just send an email to suggestionbox@reivault.com. That's actually how the pre-sale came together, so which was recommendations. Cool, Marty. I'm going to see if anybody else has any other questions. Any other questions out there? A topic that's pressing that you want to discuss?
Hey, Gary.
And if not, I will start putting some of you on. I'll just start asking since we're all unmuted. That's Dave, right? Dave in Alabama?
Yes, that's correct.
What's happening?
Hey,
how are
Dave.
You?
I'm doing well. Are you waiting on my question?
Sure. Yes. Go for it.
I am wanting to add several zip codes. It's been a fairly nice...
Dave, that was my mistake. Go ahead, repeat
it.
Everybody
okay. I had wanted to add three other zip codes, and I sent them in, and then I got a response back that it was possible there wasn't enough addresses that met the criteria. And some of that area is fairly high end with some commercial, but is it a mistake to mail if it doesn't meet my criteria, or do you think I need to widen that criteria out?
Chris, you want to address that?
It's a tough question. I can't. The answer is it's not a cut and dry. I have to look at that. I would have to look at that. What I would ask you to do is if you could reply. Let me just see if I could look at it real quick while we're here.
I think I just got a response today from your office that said that there wasn't enough addresses in that that met my parameters. I've been real happy with the calls that we have got on that initial mailer, and we've made some offers. We don't have an accepted offer yet, but I feel like we've made some really good progress.
Awesome. You getting offers out to all of them, sending the pre-sale or putting them on the follow-up days?
I haven't sent pre-sale to all of them yet, no.
Okay. I would, by the way. I would really push hard to make offers. You can do it yourself if you want, or if you haven't signed up for that pre-sale, super easy to get them out.
Yeah, I have signed up. I like that. I've sent, I think, two or three so far.
Okay. Yeah, get offers. If not, we discussed this a couple of weeks ago. Sometimes we'll get sellers that call in, and then we cannot get them back on the phone and get them on a follow-up letter. Just click that send STL follow-up letter, put a date in there, and the date, you know, when should the follow-up begin, put tomorrow as the date, and get them off of a postcard, get them onto a follow-up letter. And that should get them back to call you. That happens, but I would be making offers consistently.
Yep.
We've been continuously cranking. We picked up two more deals this week.
That's good.
We're trying to get to five a week in this one market. We've got a new team and that we've been scaling up, and we closed two deals last week. We picked up two, and we picked up another two this week. But it's all coming from the follow-up on deals we would miss normally. So get those offers out.
You mentioned last week that you had a target of talking to a certain number of sellers to reach a deal, and I think it was four per day should generate one deal a week. I think maybe you said that, or maybe I didn't understand. Was that talking to first time you talked to them? Counting the follow-ups at all, follow-up calls?
No, it's basically, I think it was trying to close three to four deals a month should be, you know, you really want to do it right,
and be conservative. You should talk to 3 to 4 sellers a day, 4 days a week.
Is that
live?
Is that
live?
First contact with them, or the follow-ups also?
It doesn't even matter. You should really talk to one. You know, every seller that's on your list that is not dead, right? You've decided that there's any maybe potential someday future. I would be talking to those sellers once a month. I'd be reaching out to them for some type of activity, phone call once a month. And because remember, most of the deals are going to take 4, 5, or 6, or 7 interactions with them on the phone. I would just have a habit of working towards talking to 3 or 4 sellers live a day.
I like that. And that's not a problem. And quite a few of my sellers, my first contact was only a week ago, and I'm already doing some follow-up with some of those early ones.
Yeah. You know, and sometimes, you know, people, if Chris always says, if they're accepting your initial offer, you probably didn't go low enough. So don't, you know, I call it 3 or 5 no's equal a yes. And we're seeing it consistently on deals. You know, I shared the deal last week or a couple weeks ago where a lady hung up on us. She wanted 100 grand. We offered her 60. And by the way, that 60 was a little high. We should have gone even lower, but we offered her 60 and she hung up on us. And we sent her an offer, and then 3 weeks later, it came back signed. And then we got on the phone with her, and she was her demeanor was completely changed. Her demeanor was totally changed. She was apologetic. In fact, she apologized and said that we got her at a bad time, and she's put more thought into selling, and she's ready to go. We actually sold that deal. What did we make, Chris? I think we made either 5 or 6 grand. So it wasn't a lot.
Yeah, it wasn't a lot, but still, it was money we wouldn't have made had we not sent that offer and that paperwork.
Yeah.
Dave, the ticket that you sent in, there was a ticket you sent in about a buyer mailing too, right?
That's correct.
Yeah, I have both of those in the queue for me to look at later. So allow me to look at those. It's hard for me to answer them on the fly because I got to go in to our system and kind of look at more data. And so I'll reply back to you on that, because typically it's never a cut and dry answer, you know. And I don't want to give a cut and dry answer because I want to make sure I give the right answer. So I'd rather just I'll look at it and I'll reply back to you, and we can have a dialogue on that specifically after me looking at the data.
Sounds good. Thanks a lot.
Okay, no problem, buddy. Thank you.
Anybody else have a question or topic they want to discuss? If not, I'll start putting... Hey, who's this?
John in Memphis.
Hey, John.
I was sitting here listening to what you said to the first guy about how you guys at the most take 3 to 5 minutes to figure out the value of the property. So you get on the phone with people like the woman who hung up on you. How long is it before, you know, you're asking how much she wants for the property and then you spring on her the $60,000? How long is that taking to do that?
I mean, as far as on the call itself?
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
how much time
you
are
know,
you spending developing rapport with somebody before you're talking about a price for the property? Was that the first time that you talked to this woman when she hung up on you? Was it a first call?
No, what happened is that she called in. We have a VA that does initial phone screening for the leads, right, internally. So the VA would call the person and get additional information, go through a series of questions about the tenants, the condition of the property, if we were to pay all cash and close quickly, what would you take on the deal, et cetera, and then we get all the numbers. And then at that point, then our main acquisitions person is the one that makes the call to the seller and would make the call to the seller. This is Steve, actually. There's a call on our recorded calls that talks about his approach. And his approach, as a way to kind of buffer the situation, he doesn't come across as the investor. He comes across as being working for the company. And so it's different. I don't know. Have you had a chance to listen to Steve's call?
No. Where's it at?
Okay.
I'll listen to it today.
Yeah, I'll, you know, if you want, if you just send an email to dealhelp@reivo.com and ask for Steve's call, and I'll reply back to you with the link to the call directly.
Okay.
And then what he does is that he positions himself as kind of being as almost an advocate for the seller. So it's different if I come to you and I say, I'm going to offer you $60,000 to this property, then I look like a bastard, right? Because you're going to look at me and say, you know, I can't believe you're offering me this low of a price. However, if I say, you know what, I got to tell you, you know, the company I work for, we have a lot of sellers that call us, and, you know, lately, I mean, they've been buying properties at, you know, $55,000 or so. And is that something you would accept? And you might say, no, I definitely wouldn't. I said, well, I can see what I can do for you. I can come back to them and maybe see if they might be willing to consider yours, if it's better, a better situation or whatever. And so the dialogue is a little bit different. So I think that allows us to kind of keep rapport a little bit better with the sellers, because they're not seeing the person on the phone as the bad guy. It's the company, and the guy on the phone is really just trying to be trying to see if he can make it work for the seller, right? So kind of be an advocate for the seller. However, though, that being said, you know, we're not going to spend 5 minutes on the phone or 10 minutes on the phone with the seller to try and build that rapport and everything else. So it has to happen fairly quickly. The other thing to think about is that this is something also that works, is that, you know, whenever you call a seller, sometimes frequency of calls builds rapport, right? So in other words, if I talk to you today, and the first time I call you, it's, hey, this is Chris. I called you about the house, and you're like, Chris who? I sent you the postcard. What postcard? You remember this? And then finally you remember. So however, if I talk to you, you say, well, that's not price is going to work for me. I say, well, you know what? Let me call you back. Let me see what I can do. I'll call you back. And maybe we have two or three conversations, right, over a period of the next, you know, $24 to $40. And in the end, it's still the same dialogue. It's just kind of spread out over two or three conversations. What ends up happening is now the third time I call you and I say, hey, this is Chris. And all of a sudden you recognize my voice and say, hey, Chris, how you doing? So it kind of builds that familiarity. And what I would suggest is send me an email to dealhelp@reivo.com, and I'll point you in the direction of the call that we have with Steve. And I have two other audio videos that you can listen to. That can help you in that regard, because rapport is really built on very quickly. When you get on the phone with somebody, they'll know very quickly if they feel comfortable with you. Because it's not necessarily about the words you say; it's how you come across over the phone, your tonality, and certain phrases. But to answer your question that you initially asked. It's, you know, we try to build rapport quickly. I would say that most calls get maybe 1 or 2 minutes at the most before we get dialed into the nitty-gritty details, you know, about the offer. And I think positioning yourself as working for a company and you're doing it on behalf of a company, I believe. Steve used to do it the other way, and now that he does it this way, he said on the call he would never go back to doing it the other way again. And the people that I've suggested this to, as far as having that kind of conversation with the seller, have all come back to me and say, much easier to have that hard conversation about price when you're not taking the stance of you being the guy that's making the offer. It's the company that you work for, so you're just don't kill the messenger.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Now, I think my phone calls have been, the first two or three phone calls, it's as though I'm gathering information about the property. And so I develop a rapport pretty fast, but I'm wondering if I'm wasting time making all these calls to the sellers too.
Well, when you say making all these calls, so have you talked, how many times are you talking to the seller?
On average, four to five times.
So why? So the first call is gathering information. What are the other four calls you're making?
Well, like I said, it comes across, I think, to the seller as I'm still gathering information about the property. You know, by the second call, I would have certainly looked at the comps and know something. A lot of times people aren't telling me on the first call what they want for the property. They're telling me to make them an offer.
you know, if they do that, then you could, if somebody's doing that, if somebody's, the only reason I would extend the call and have four or five conversations is if I think there's something there. And I just feel that I just need to continue to go there before, I think this is the deal, I just got to work it. But generally, I think that many number of calls is too far to go without making an offer, in my opinion. I think that if you're on the phone, you know, most of the sellers, they don't want to tell you a price, but, you know, they do know their price. So it's a matter of you got to get them out of the bushes. It's like they're hiding in the bushes, like a possum in the bushes, and you got to kind of draw them out in order to see if it's worthwhile or not. Because the other problem is you could, you know, it's not four or five calls. It's four or five calls, multiply that by 20, 30 leads of people that you shouldn't be having four or five calls with. All of a sudden now you're lost in the sea of calls and you're not, and the good deals are slipping through the cracks. So part of it is really identifying, getting better at identifying which are the deals, which are the ones you should be spending that time on, and which ones are not. But now going back, what do you think the challenge is? Why do you think the primary reason is that you're having to make those four or five calls? Is it because you only feel comfortable making them an offer initially, or the second call?
My sense that might be motivation, John. Well, you know, it's kind of an imperfect art. You know, Chris and I are doing this where we're working, you know, with the machine, right? We've got an inside sales group that are doing the initial touching, and then we've got an acquisition manager. And so it's, you know, it's really for us, it's a numbers game, and it scales super nice, right? We can actually do this in many areas around the country. You know, if for me, I'll just give you, you know, and I'm in California, a little different market, a little bit more sophisticated seller. It usually is a couple of phone conversations, and I'm usually testing motivation. So I call. I'm doing information gathering. If I'm doing the calling, I would do information gathering on the first call. I would be testing motivation, right? So I'm asking questions, but I'm really just testing motivation. I'm getting them so I can sense their urgency, and if I can spot any problems that they have. So I'll ask them about the tenants, the rent, the condition of the property. You know, and then I'll get to, as soon as I feel like I've got them opening up a little bit, then I'll start working to get them to a number, right? Sometimes I would even, you know, give them a little bit of a range. Chris would be a little bit more of a shotgun approach, Chris, if you would agree with me, get to a number a little faster.
I would consider it more of a sledgehammer approach. I want to find out, the way I approach it is, I'm nice. We have somebody who does these calls for me, for us, right? But obviously, I used to do it before. And so, if I'm nice, I'm very, very good over the phone, I believe, and trying to build rapport. But at the same time, my objective is I want to know, are we in the ballpark? Because I don't want to spend, the last thing I want to do is spend 10 minutes on the phone call with somebody that in the end is just a waste of time because they just are completely unrealistic on price. They want way too much money. And, you know, so that's my biggest concern is I'm okay with spending time with a seller on the phone so long as it is the right seller. So I'm not adverse to having those multiple conversations. But part of the process is figuring out who are those people that you should be having those conversations with.
So at that point, you've said somebody is unrealistic about the price. They're way off base. Are you going to, like, get off the phone quickly and start sending them, like, the sales team live letters? What are you going to do at that point? Forget them, it's a dead deal? Or are you going to keep following up by mail?
Well, we keep following up. We'll put a pre-sale package on them, and then we have a series of follow-up calls. You know, we've had the one that Gary mentioned, that deal. We had another deal that we did this month where our initial contact with the seller was 3 months ago. They wanted too much money. It wasn't a price that we could really do anything with, and we stayed in touch, and 4 months later we got the deal. And so we do follow up because circumstances change, their situation changes.
I'd put an offer in their face. You know, yeah. Chris always said, don't assume anything from the seller. So whatever they say,
you know, many times if they come up with some unrealistic number, it's because they have not decided to depart and part ways with the asset. They still are holding that asset near and dear to their heart. For whatever reason, they're not ready. Put an offer, get an offer in their nose. Get them a package. Whether we're doing it for you, we're just trying to get the offers out one way or the other. They've got to be made. If you can do it on your own, you wanted to do it that way, do it. But get them something written that says that you're serious. You're gonna convert that way, and then follow up with them. Follow up with them in 14 days or 30 days, and don't let a lot of time go by, because when they're ready, when they're finally ready to sell, they're going to sell. And, you know, who was it? I was talking with, I can't remember who it was on the phone this week. It's like buying the white car, right? Yeah, you're driving down the road, and you never see white cars, and then all of a sudden you go and you buy a white car, and then you see, like, white cars everywhere, right? A seller, as soon as they've made the decision to sell, now all of a sudden that's when they're seeing bandit signs and they're seeing everything and we buy house signs and, right, and radio. I mean, they completely ignored it. But when people are ready to sell, you want to be in front of them. And that's why you put a professional package in their nose that they're not going to throw away, and you follow up with them. I think if there's a maybe someday opportunity, don't assume anything about these sellers. Get them an offer and follow up with them once a month. And the other thing is, I wouldn't spend a crazy amount of time beating around the bush building rapport about, you know, the sunshine and relationships and, you know, my mom knows your mom type of thing. I would try to get to a price, or at least a ballpark price, so that you know that whether you're wasting your time or not. Because you don't have to spend hours on the phone. You could spend 4 hours on the phone and then finally give them a price, and they reject it completely, and they go away. So the relationship building and rapport building is just to sense motivation and to see if you can identify a problem that they have. Because usually the problems are what we're buying, right? A bad tenant, some sort of illness, some sort of money problem, you know, tired of the property, whatever it might be. And many of these times the sellers are going to come in with a high price. Don't worry about the price of what they're offering. Mm-hmm. Just get them something. And sometimes, you know, and we're testing this right now, if, you know, sometimes we're locking up properties knowing that, you know, we've got to go back and renegotiate. I told this story this week. I can't remember who it was as well. I just sold an apartment. I'm so glad I could get rid of this apartment. But I had a 16-unit apartment in Sacramento, and I put it on the market for $870, all right? And anyway, I ended up going in and out of contract twice. So the buyer fell through, and it went back into contract, and then it fell through, and it went, you know. But at that point in time, I wanted to sell, right? So I ended up relisting the property. I ended up putting it into contract for $830, and then the seller came back and asked for like $15,000 in credits. So I ended up, you know, selling the property for, what, $815. Now, if I knew on the front end that I was going to sell it for $815, I wouldn't have signed the contract. You got it? But it wasn't until I already decided I wanted to take the money out of that property, and I already had a loan that I wanted to fund, right, and put it into some private lending. So I was committed, but again, it took me a little bit of time. So we're doing the same thing. Sometimes you may have to go into contract at a little higher price or give somebody a range until they're emotionally decided to sell. And there's a big difference between the time somebody, you know, gets on the phone with you and the time that they sign the contract. They have to be, you know, they have to be ready, willing, and able to sell that property. And so we want to get them in there as fast as possible. I don't know if that helps, John, but I wouldn't spend four or five phone conversations.
It does help. Thank you.
Yeah. Cool. Let's see. Any other comments there, Chris, you want to add?
No, I'm good.
Okay. Okay, good. Anybody else have a question for us?
Hi, Chris. Gary, this is Art.
Hey, Art, how are you?
I'm doing good. I'm really close to nailing my first one down. Got to the HUD one stage, so things
are
good.
Oh, excellent. Very good.
Yeah, so we're moving on that. One of the issues that I'm having is with the this $100 I've been putting on the agreements, the $100 earnest money. And the way I have been explaining it to them is basically...
Oh, tell me what the issue is first. What's the rebuttal?
They want more money.
They
want more money. That's the issue.
Right.
So I've been telling them that's not a problem. You know, how much of a deposit do you want? I'm asking them that. And then I'm saying, you know, I can understand, you know, where you're coming from. You want to know that when you sign this and you commit to me that you've sold the property, right? And then I tell them that, you know, I explain to them that, look, I'm not actually taking title to the company, you know, but as soon as we get, you know, the funding approval, I'll be able to increase that so that you can know that this whole thing is moving along very nicely. And they're still wanting that money up front, and I just don't know how to really combat it other than what I'm telling them.
Well, how much do they typically want? And
they want $1,000.
And are you committing to them, or are you just kind of leaving them? I didn't say $1,000. Because typically the way that we go ahead.
If they press the issue, I walk away.
Okay. So they want because you tell me if on the next say how I know we only say it, but let me know if that's what you're saying as well. Is I would only say, all right, you know, I'd be more than happy to put up. You know, typically, you know, you always ask. Like, this is just a normal standard routine. That, in fact, nobody ever asked you for more money. So I said, you know, hey, not a problem. I understand. And I can certainly appreciate that you want to feel secure about this deal. And I wouldn't go through all this time and effort in order if I wasn't serious about doing a deal. So what would you like as a deposit? And they say, I want $1,000. I said, great. I'll go ahead and put that on the agreement. And they might say, well, gee, can you give that to me now? I said, well, no, we actually put that up with the title company, and here's how it works is that as soon as you get the paperwork agreed upon, as soon as you get the paperwork back and you agree on everything, we'll go ahead and get it out to funding, for our funding approval. As soon as we get that done, then at that point, then we'll go ahead and put up whatever the deposit we agree upon. And they might say, well, can you put it up now? I said, you know, we put a lot of properties on the contract. We'll do this nationwide, and we couldn't, you know, we couldn't just put all these deposits for every single property. Now, with yours, I'm pretty sure there's not anything going to be, you know, we're going to be able to get everything approved. And once we get it approved, at that point, then we'll put the deposit up because we're actually, once we get it approved for funding, our funding source is the one that gives us the money for the deposit. So you can also say that the funding source is where the deposit's coming from. And even if the other thing is, even if I were to put up a deposit, if I don't get the funding approval for it, then you know, nobody can do anything with that money anyway because that money goes back to us. And so I just would rather put up the deposit once everything is done and approved, and at least that way, from that moment on, you know that it's a sure thing. And I don't anticipate there being a problem, Mark, because your property is exactly the type of properties we're looking to purchase, and we've done many of them. So that's typically how we work. Is that kind of what you're explaining to them, Mark?
Yes. I'm actually being a little bit about as transparent as what you said. I'm actually telling them, saying, look, I'm wholesaling the property. I'm not taking title to the property. So what I'm going to do is once we sign this agreement, I'm going to take this to my investors. I'm going to, which I have, you know, two or three in this particular area that are looking for your type of properties. Once we go through the they're going to want to check the property out, do an inspection of the property, and they commit to the property, they will be putting down, you know, $2,000-$3,000 in hand money to the title company.
Well, I'll stop you right there because I wouldn't do what you're doing because you're already putting a certain level of uncertainty in the eyes of the seller because you're presenting yourself not as a buyer, but as the middle person, right? So I would not present myself that way. I always present myself as the buyer. And, you know, because sellers don't understand wholesaling, understand what we do. And so anytime you explain to a seller a situation that they're not 100% familiar with, which even realtors who are in the business sometimes don't know what we do, much less a seller that is not used to buying and selling properties on a regular basis, That's going to cause confusion. And anytime you and I believe that explaining it in that way and presenting yourself not as a buyer is probably one of the reasons that that's becoming a challenge, because all of a sudden you're not really buying it. So I don't know if I want to put myself on the contract with you. So it's just I wouldn't present it that way. I will always present myself as the buyer, and you know, you have funding partners, you have funding sources, but in the end, you're the buyer. You're the one that's making the commitment. I find that there's really no benefit to explaining it in that you're a wholesaler, because also keep in mind is this: as a wholesaler, you're acting as a principal. If you tell the seller that I have a group of buyers and I'm looking to wholesale it, and I'm gonna, you know, and you get into that conversation, you're also entering a conversation, a great area in the terms of a real estate licensing arena, right? So you're presenting yourself, the owner sees that as almost as you being a broker, and you never want to present yourself that way, because then you can get yourself in other trouble as well. So always present yourself as the principal, and in your transaction, you are selling the contract. You're never selling the property. You're selling the contract, but that information, you never tell the seller that. The sellers, you're coming across always as the principal of the transaction, never as a wholesaler or a third party or a middle person or anything like that, because it's going to cause confusion, and also it's going to make them think you're acting in the realm of a real estate brokerage relationship, and if anything goes wrong with that deal, then you don't want the licensing board to come after you, because that's the way that they're construing everything that you're doing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, perfect. Okay. Yeah, I'm glad I asked the question.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you asked it. That's a very good question.
Yeah, okay. I just have one other concern, really, is when I am getting my leads in and they're being processed by the VA, when they're pulling my comparables, they're using a variance of 70%.
On RealQuest?
Yes. And I've emailed them twice now regarding that, because I'm ending up going over and redoing every single deal that they're doing, and I don't know how to stop it. I've asked them to do 40%, 35 to 40% variance. And everyone...
Well, do me a favor. And did you send in tickets about this too as well?
I did not. I just emailed the lead process VA from Podio. I didn't.
Best way to do it, Art, on this one, and because Chris and I will actually get copied on it as well, is send an email to support@salesteamlive.com.
Okay.
The VAs don't know how to do that. They're basically just following process and procedures put in place. They wouldn't even have an idea what you're talking about. Send an email to support@salesteamlive.com.
Okay.
And put the request in. You'll get a ticket number, and then
right.
The team will make the appropriate changes in your RealQuest account for you. And then they'll basically respond and say it was done, and they'll typically have that done within 24 hours. We always say, you know, give everybody 48 hours, but usually they'll have it done same day, if not a couple hours.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a very simple change. Now, one thing to keep in mind, Art, is that so the VAs do the processing, right? And sometimes you may go into RealQuest, right, I'm assuming, because you might want to pull comps a different way, right? They pull comps one way, you talk to the seller, you're thinking, well, let me pull them a different way, right?
Right.
So the other thing is, I'm going to make a note of it here. In RealQuest, there's a doc that we have in Kajabi. You got to make sure that if you change, they're going to go in and set the particular setting for 35 to 40. However, if you go in and you change and you do comps outside that parameter, you got to switch it back too, because what happens is that it may not switch back on its own. Does that make sense? So in other words, if you have
Yeah, because when I'm literally I've redone every one, and you know, and sometimes I have to use a different variance, or I have to go out a little bit further, you know, time wise, 9 months,
right.
know, 12, you know, and a little bit further out distant wise to get a real feel for the market. So, and then yeah, it, yeah, I set it back. So are they?
Okay.
They're not using my real Quest account, are they? They're using.
No, they're using yours.
They are using
they
mine.
They should be using yours. Yeah.
Okay.
If you send in a username password, that's a requirement. So they'd be logging into your account and pulling comps off of your account. So they would.
Well, I've never had a variance set at 70%. I can tell you that. So I don't know where it's.
How long has that been going on for? Art?
Since day one.
Been a while.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, just do me a favor, and this is a comment to everybody. We always want to know about. You know, we had a similar situation with our VA team that they were internal team that there was an issue that then they brought it up to our attention and we got something fixed. Actually, it wasn't an issue, but they alerted us to something that alerted us to something else. With this or anything like that, I would say always err on the side of letting us know earlier or as soon as you think that there's something wrong rather than waiting. Because, you know, we don't want you to be frustrated, obviously. It's an annoyance for you to have to re-pull comps, right? So that would be annoying to me if I was in your shoes, right? At the same time, we need to know about those things. So I would encourage you, and this accounts to everybody, any issues that come up, we just want to know about them because it could be an issue or it could not be an issue. It could be miscommunication, whatever the case may be. But we want everything to run as smoothly as possible because if Art, if you're having to re-pull comps, then that affects your productivity because now you have to spend time pulling comps versus calling and with sellers and everything else. So, you know, appreciate it. And so, in other words, don't be bashful about letting us know about things like that. You know, not that you are, but rather, you know, we'd rather know sooner rather than later.
Okay.
Because we'll get on top of those, and we want to make sure everything's running, that we're running a tight ship.
Okay. Thank you.
Perfect.
Keep us posted on the deal. If you have any questions, you know, if you're getting closer to the closing, if you need us to review a HUD, just to make sure, if you have a question about anything, let us know because we want to make sure, that obviously, that you know that you get to the finish line.
Oh, I'll get there.
Okay, I know you will. I know you will. Thank you.
The sharks are circling in the water.
you smell the Ben Franklin's in the water. So no problem. Keep us posted, Art.
Okay, thanks.
All right.
Awesome. Great stuff. Well, everybody, we're at the end of the hour, and I don't see any other hands raised. So, Chris, any final remarks before we close?
No. I say the one thing I would say is for everybody to really treat this. What we have is a little bit different, I would think, a little bit. And I use that word in quotation marks. Then what people, you know, this is not a coach. What we have here is we don't consider this a coaching program or some sort of mentoring or anything like that in the normal sense, right? So typically you have, you know, somebody that's teaching and everybody just kind of listens and it's kind of like a one-way interaction. You know, our objective with this is it's kind of like me and Gary are not sitting at the front of the room. Everybody should envision this as us sitting around the table, and all of us together are working together to make this work as efficiently as and effectively as possible. And so by that, I say that to say that we want to encourage you guys to participate. And whether it's something that's not working correctly, whether it be interacting with us in order to get the help you need, whatever it is, you got to think of it as us just sitting around the table together and all of us together working to make this work. Because we're internally, me and Gary are using the same exact system that you guys are using and working through. We're using it. So, you know, so that's the one comment I wanted to make. Maybe you could say it better, Gary, but, you know, we're all of us are in this together to make it work. So anytime any issues pop up, we want to know about them sooner rather than later. Because if there's an issue, or if there's a challenge, or if there's something that we need to do a little bit better or change something in the way the process is done, hey, it's something that you might bring up, and then everybody benefits, including us. And so that's the one comment I wanted to make.
Yeah, I would agree. Don't fester. If you got an issue, you know, these are good forums. They're unscripted, you know, the good, the bad, the ugly. Let's just
talk about it as a group. If you've got an issue, maybe two or three other people have an issue, and maybe some of you actually even have an answer. We'd love to have some of you participate, so it's not Chris and I are not, this isn't a guru model. We're peers.
Yeah.
And we're stronger as a group. And, you know, I'll give you one other thing. Dave in Alabama, we were talking about the recorded call with Steve. And by the way, that's May 6th, if you want to write that down, so you don't have to send an email to Deal Help. The May 6th call is a good one to listen to. We had Steve, who's our acquisition manager in Florida, and he was talking about how he approaches sellers. You can go find that. We had somebody, this is a couple weeks ago, they were just talking about, they sent an email to suggestionbox@reivault.com. And the suggestion was how it would be really great if we could actually have minute markers from these calls. We're on these calls for an hour rather than having to go back if you wanted to be able to search for something like buyers or where Chris and I were talking about turnkey properties or the interview with Steve, how you could search on the member site when you log into reivault.com. You could just search and go find, you know, all those calls. That was an agenda, an overview of the call. Well, that was a great suggestion. We're having one of our VAs actually go through and listen to every single call we've done in 2014 and break up the calls so that it's faster and more productive for all of you. There's a little search thing, little search marker on the left-hand side. So over the next couple of weeks, we're actually going to have all the calls broken down. So you'll know at, you know, 2 minutes and 45 seconds, Chris and I were talking about this. Or Art had the question, Marty had the question around pulling comps, and so we'll have that done. And that was purely because of a recommendation. So, you know, be proactive, be accountable, ask questions, and don't let stuff fester. If you need help on something, we're trying to give you the resources. This is a great call. You can, if it's, you know, not Tuesday, you can send an email to dealhelp@reivault.com. The reason it goes to Deal Help is because that's deal-related, and it gets expedited to Chris and myself. If it's something technical in nature, you know, we've got a team of, I don't know, I think we got 18 or 19 people on the back end involved in this process, and so we just want to make it as efficient as possible for all of us. So with that, have a great week, everybody. We'll look forward to all of us on the call next Tuesday.
Thanks, everybody. Thanks for being on the call.
Thanks, guys.